From the beginning of civilization, we have always had this irreconcilable conflict with different peoples, maybe because of language or culture or race or religion. We don't seem to ever want to get along. And we've always had enemies since original sin. And we felt the pain of being rejected or not accepted or not being considered one of them. You know, like me being biracial, half American, half Hispanic, I always got it from both sides. For the Hispanics, I was an American. For the Americans, I'm Hispanic. And for no one, am I just simply Eric. And maybe you can relate. You were born here, but your parents are Mexican. And the American said, you're a Mexican. And the Mexican said, no, you're an American because you have papers and we don't. Or maybe you're not part of the popular crowd at school, or you don't look like the girls on TikTok, and you feel rejected, even though maybe no one has said anything, but the thousands of hours your parents let you watch your screen has affected you psychologically in a very negative way, as we know it can. Or maybe among family members, you're the poorest or the richest, or you look different, or you're darker or lighter color. We all know what it's like to be rejected or not accepted in some way. But today's gospel reading goes even deeper to a history of great animosity and war and murder and ravaging of cultures and peoples. The Canaanite people were the greatest enemies of Israel. Throughout their history as a kingdom, there was no country that fought them more and killed more Israelites than the Canaanites. But Jesus finds himself in a pagan territory. He goes there. Every other Jew walked around it. They wouldn't step foot into that land because of the painful history of what those people had done to them, and because they did not want to be rendered unclean. But Christ walks into this pagan enemy territory, not unlike how it could feel walking around here at Rhino on a Friday or Saturday night, a pagan enemy territory full of all kinds of excess and noise. Trust me, I live here. And Jesus walks into it. He doesn't go around it. He stands in the midst of it. But then this woman approaches him, a woman who is of the tribe and people that are his greatest enemies. And she begs and pleads with him because she knows that he is Lord and Son of David. And she's desperate, like no mother can be more so than when their child is tormented. And Jesus tells the apostles exactly what they were thinking. I'm here for the lost tribe of Israel. These people are not our people. They're not one of us. Yet at the same time, while affirming the way of thinking of the apostles, he's open and wants to heal everyone, even our enemies. And so she begs him once again, prostrate before him for her daughter's healing. And the words of Christ seem very harsh. It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs. That's how the Jews referred to the Canaanites. They were dogs. Now, in the original Greek, Jesus uses the diminutive and says the word puppies, maybe to make it sound a little cuter and not as harsh. But nonetheless, his words are very harsh, but they reflect the mindset of the people then. Christ is aware of the fact that she's their enemy and that the Israelites around him want nothing to do with her and want him to send her away. They're probably thinking, your daughter deserves to be possessed by a demon, you pagan. You've worshipped these false gods. You put yourself in this situation, and those are the consequences. Why should Jesus heal you? You don't deserve it. You're not one of us. But Jesus does it anyway. This mindset, even veiled in religious presentation, is often the mindset that the evil one uses against you and me. You don't deserve to go to confession and be forgiven. You put yourself in this situation. It's your fault. You deserve it. And we think that because of what's happened to us, whether we've been traumatized or we've done something traumatic or something traumatic has happened to us, we believe the lie and the false religious narrative that it's my fault, I deserve it, I have to deal with it, I'm no good, I'm worthless, this is my lot in life. And yet Jesus wants to heal us if only we ask him. If only, like her, we humbly recognize, you're right, Lord, I don't deserve to be forgiven. I don't deserve to receive you in the Eucharist. I don't deserve to be healed. But you can, and you want to, and I need it, and so I beg you. That religious disposition of complete trust and humility before the Lord is what can make a horrible sinner a great saint. It's the story of the lives of countless saints in our history. St. Augustine of Hippo, living with a woman and not married by the church, sinning in fornication over and over again, having a child out of wedlock. And yet through his conversion, he becomes a great bishop and one of the greatest theologians and saints in our church's history. St. Paul, or Saul as he was called, who helped facilitate the murder or the martyrdom of Deacon Stephen, the first martyr of the church, would go on to become author of half the books of the New Testament. There are countless saints throughout our history that had a horrific past, that were really terrible people. But because they humbly recognized they needed healing and they didn't deserve it, but they insisted before the Lord, God brought them around to become some of the greatest saints in our history. This enemy of Israel, this Canaanite woman and her daughter, experienced healing at the word of Jesus when many other Israelites were sick and were not healed. In fact, Jesus' healing of this woman would become a contention and cause for fury among his own people when he reminds them. In Israel, there were all kinds of people that were hungry and starving and sick and possessed, and they were not healed. But God healed the pagan over and over again, not you, because you presume on your salvation. You presume because you're with the chosen race, the chosen people, that you will automatically be saved, and that presumption will be your downfall. Like when we presume to go to communion, when we refuse to go to confession, it becomes our downfall, our death, not our salvation, according to the first letter of Paul in the Corinthians chapter 10, to the Corinthians chapter 10. But that humble recognition that, Lord, I am not worthy. Lord, this is my fault. The nature of sin means that I freely chose to do this and I could not have. And then insisting on his mercy and forgiveness can bring about our salvation and a worthy reception of communion. Please, Lord, even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from the table of their masters. Jesus said to her in reply, O woman, great is your faith. That's the faith we need. We need our enemies to teach us how to believe sometime, because we won't look at them. We won't humanize them. And we presume that they are completely bad. You'll experience and hear and see that relentlessly in the next few months leading up to our presidential elections again. The vilification of the other is obscene and ridiculous, and we are pitting ourselves, Americans, one against another, dividing our country all the more, it seems like, with every presidential election cycle. And yet Christ reminds us today that our enemies can be holier than us, that our enemies can have a greater faith than us, that our enemies are those Christ wants to save. And so, can we see them with his eyes and love them with his heart? Because salvation doesn't come because of our culture, our race, our color, our language, or how much money we have, or whether we're a priest, bishop, pope, deacon, cardinal, or laity, or religious. Salvation depends exclusively on those who join themselves to the Lord, ministering to him, loving the name of the Lord, becoming his servants, keeping the Sabbath free from profanation, holding on to the covenant. Those God will bring to his holy mountain and make joyful in the house of prayer. May we be counted among them, not because of who we are or what we've done, but because of who Christ is and what he's done for us.